please. So we'll start with William Konchak on Emerson and then move on afterwards to Gadamer and to Sloterdijk. So thank you. Okay. Happy to hear whatever you have to say.
All right, thanks. Well, again, I'm William Konchak. I'm a doctoral student from the University of Iceland. And I'm going to be talking about self-transformation in respect to philosophy as a way of life, Hansker, Gadamer, and Ralph Waldo Emerson. And this research that's currently in progress. So to begin with, what is philosophy as a way of life? Briefly, this is a conception of philosophy explored by French philosopher Pierre Hadot, where the emphasis is laid upon the transformation of the philosopher. From his perspective, ancient philosophy was intended to activate a conversion in outlook, a complete reversal from habitual and traditional conceptions that focus on such things as wealth and pleasure, turning instead towards wisdom, simplicity, and contemplation. Wisdom was pursued as a way of life and integrated into one's life to bring peace of mind, inner freedom, and experiences of oneness. Hadot's conception of philosophy as a way of life, with its emphasis on self-transformation, influenced Michel Foucault. Wimberly writes of how the two philosophers both shared the goal with the ancients that philosophy might occasion personal and social transformation. Wimberly also discusses how these two thinkers approached ancient philosophy as part of a practice of philosophy as a way of life, and resultantly, Hadot and Foucault put ancient philosophy to use as part of their projects of contemporary transformation. In the history of philosophy, both thinkers find a body of wisdom that can be cultivated and reworked to serve the present. For Hadot, philosophical theory is to be put in the service of philosophical life and self-transformation, and an important part of this was practices, which he calls spiritual exercises, and describes as practices which could be physical, as in dietary regimes, or discursive, as in dialogue and meditation, or intuitive, as in contemplation, but which were all intended to effect a modification and transformation in the subject who practiced them. The philosophy teacher's discourse could also assume the form of a spiritual exercise if the discourse were presented in such a way that the disciple, as auditor, reader, or interlocutor, could make spiritual progress and transform himself within. From this, we can see the broad scope of what Hadot considered as a spiritual exercise. Hadot describes Socratic dialogue as a kind of communal spiritual exercise to attend to and know thyself, where knowledge includes aspects that, such aspects as working towards wisdom, knowing one's essential being, and one's moral state by examining one's conscience. Hadot also discusses how Socrates was proficient at inner dialogue, and that meditation, the practice of dialogue with oneself, seems to have been important with his disciples. Hadot writes, "The intimate connection between dialogue with others and dialogue with oneself is profoundly significant. Only he who is capable of a genuine encounter with the other is capable of an authentic encounter with himself, and the converse is equally true. Dialogue can be genuine only within the framework of presence to others and to oneself. From this perspective, every spiritual exercise is a dialogue insofar as it's an exercise of authentic presence to oneself and to others." So Hadot talks about how the same thing happens in every spiritual exercise. We must let ourselves be changed in our point of view, attitudes, and convictions. This means that we must dialogue with ourselves and hence do battle with ourselves. And Hadot describes a broad range of approaches in his exploration of philosophy as a way of life, including aspects such as dialogue, profound experiences of oneness, being in the present moment, and many other aspects. Now, Gadamer and Emerson are interesting figures to consider in relation to philosophy as a way of life in a contemporary context, as both thinkers have an emphasis on practical orientation in their philosophy, and both thinkers were influenced by ancient philosophy more generally. Gadamer, particularly by Plato and also Aristotle, and Emerson by Plato, Neoplatonism, and Stoicism. In this talk, I'll draw upon Gadamer's approach to dialogue with others and human community, alongside Emerson's conception of self-reliance and his approach's interconnection to nature to work towards articulating aspects of outer and inner dialogue and experiences of interconnection and oneness that Hadot discusses in relation to ancient philosophy as a way of life. Okay, if we first turn to Gadamer, at the heart of Gadamer's approach is a sense of dialogue and openness to the other through conversation. An important part of this is learning to take the risk of being open and to embrace change and growth. For Gadamer, all understanding is self-understanding, which means that our acts of interpretation change us. For Gadamer, humans are finite beings embedded within their language and tradition, which are flexible and dynamic, and prejudices are positive in that they are entry points into understanding and they can evolve. Although we cannot get beyond all our prejudices, we can bring them into play and evolve our self-understanding through the transformative effects of openness to the other, whereby following the subject matter in conversation interpretation, we can move towards broader and more flexible perspectives. I would maintain that Gadamer's hermeneutics has a strong affinity with Hadot's conception of philosophy as a way of life. However, it should be noted that in the Introduction to Truth and Method, Gadamer writes that It's not my intention to make prescriptions for the sciences or the conduct of life, but to try to correct false thinking about what they are, which seems a less robust scope. However, given Gadamer's emphasis on the process of self-understanding and transformation, interconnection between theory and practice, and focus on practical philosophy in his later work, it would seem quite reasonable to me to read Gadamer from the perspective of philosophy as a way of life. I will now turn to explore Gadamer's discussion of I and Thou from Truth and Method, which I believe could be applied as a type of listening practice. Gadamer explores the I and Thou relation in respect to tradition, people, and interpretation more generally, but for the purposes of this talk, I'll be focusing on an example of verbal conversation. Gadamer discusses how there are three ways of approaching a Thou, with the idea that we may learn to respect the other in openness rather than turning a relation to our own ends. The first way is a type of predictive approach, where we understand a person similarly to any other object and seek to predict behavior. This is oriented towards our own ends, where, from a moral point of view, this orientation towards a Thou is purely self-regarding and contradicts the moral definition of man. Gadamer relates this approach to the process of interpretation as a naive faith and method and its objectifying effects. If we take this approach, we cannot truly dialogue as we are not open to the other, as we are caught up interpreting the other in terms of our preconceptions and self-serving goals. Gadamer explains a second way of relating, where the Thou is acknowledged and understood as a Thou, in that the Thou is acknowledged as a person, but despite this acknowledgement, the understanding of the Thou is still a form of self-relatedness. He explains how, from this point of view, one claims to know the Thou better than they know themselves. An example Gadamer gives is that of a charity worker who feels in his action towards the other he's doing it for the other, but in reality there isn't a true listening because there's a claim to know the other in advance. This is obviously a more subtle failure. We've all had experiences when someone has claimed to understand us and have our best interests at heart, but where they may actually be little true understanding and the good advice reflects their own preconceptions. Gadamer discusses a third way. In human relations, the important thing is, as we have seen, to experience the Thou truly as a Thou, i.e. not to overlook his claim, but to let him really say something to us. Here is where openness belongs. But ultimately, this openness does not exist only for the person who speaks. Rather, anyone who listens is fundamentally open. Without such openness to one another, there's no genuine human bond. Openness involves being able to acknowledge our own perspective of finitude to the extent that we recognize we are governed by our prejudices and are willing to bring them into play and are open to the other and to follow the subject matter, which may lead us towards new perspectives and transform us. Gadamer talks about how this is not a slavish obedience, but that openness to the other involves recognizing that I myself must accept some things that are against me, even though no one else forces me to do so. Gadamer indicates this parallels the hermeneutic experience, where we are open to the historical past and its otherness so that it has something to say to me. Now, seeking inspiration from Hadot, we could look at this as a type of spiritual or philosophical exercise, which we might call learning to listen. Gadamer, likely due to his aversion to method, does not tend to formalize methods strongly, so this is an interpretive attempt in that direction. Keeping in mind Gadamer's concerns with method, I believe this should be seen in a soft sense as an orientation towards listening rather than a rigid prescription. Now, at first glance, this exercise may look very simple and hardly worth one's while, and we may think, of course we know how to listen. But if we monitor our thoughts, we may find that we fail to listen by such things as wandering thoughts, forming judgments and responses instead of listening, problem-solving in respect to the other instead of listening, subtly bending the expressions of the other and subject matter under discussion. Such tendencies may be particularly strong during a point of contention, perhaps a dispute over one's favorite academic theory, or engaging with someone or subject matter that really pushes one's buttons. The point is, in all likelihood, we may not listen as well as we could, may often fall into a more or less dogmatic adherence to our own paradigm thought to one extent or another. So this might be an approach to help us move beyond that. If we think of the many challenges and conflicts in the world today, we may wonder how much better we might negotiate these if we could but learn to listen to one another in a more genuine way. We need not completely agree with one another, with each other, but recognize the one-sided nature of our perspectives and come to interpretations that are inclusive as possible. We can engage in reasoned thought with mutual respect, one that's always open to further revision. Gadamer writes of how, to reach an understanding in dialogue is not merely a matter of putting oneself forward and successfully asserting one's point of view, but being transformed into a communion in which we do not remain which we were. This points to the opportunity and risk, as we do not know beforehand which beliefs will be changed, where we can be surprised and pulled up short, and our previous meanings are redefined, with the opportunity for transformation, expansion, and enriched self-understanding. Now, to jump very quickly to Emerson, in his Friendship, he too points to the transformative effects of encountering another, just to give an example of it, where he writes of how friends as those who carry out the world for me to new and noble depths and enlarge the meaning of all my thoughts. So to go back to, return to Gadamer again, I'm going to look at his conception of the festival. Human community is something that's very important to Gadamer's thought, and I'll now turn to Gadamer's aesthetics to discuss his conception of the festival as an example of this. Gadamer explains, if there's one thing that pertains to all festive experiences, then it's surely the fact that they allow no separation between one person and another. A festival is an experience of community and represents community in its most perfect form. A festival is made for everyone. In a festival, judgments and separations and hierarchies between individuals are set aside towards a common respect and openness to all, where instead of falling into individual conversations and activities, a sense of unity prevails. We have no doubt all experienced aspects of this during a nation's birthday, Christmas, or other festive occasions. Gadamer explains how a normal sense of time can lead either to emptiness or boredom or frantic bustling, where we never have time for anything and yet constantly have things to do. In contrast to this is what Gadamer calls fulfilled or autonomous time, which, in a sense, the normal course of time stops and instead allows it to tarry. He writes, "The mystery of festive celebration lies in the suspension of time. In contrast to such festive occasions, we are, in our everyday lives, constantly bound by particular functions and time limits. In the festival, the particularity of our purposes gives way to a communion in a heightened self-fulfilling moment." So instead of scurrying around with our own private agendas, a more festive approach moves towards an aesthetic tarrying, being in the moment and reaching towards deeper levels of experience. For Gadamer, the aesthetic is the eminent example of hermeneutic experience, and it's not a separate realm divorced from the everyday experience. An aesthetic experience can lead to self-transformation and change self-understanding. An important part of Haddo's conception of ancient philosophy as a way of life is the profound experience of interconnection, and Haddo's conception of the festival would seem, and Gadamer's conception of the festival would seem in that direction. So, Gadamer's approach to opening the other through listening and conversation would seem to parallel Haddo's conception of discourse with others. Turning to Emerson, I will briefly discuss his conception of self-reliance, which I think works well to Haddo's conception of inner discourse, and then turn to Emerson's perspectives on our interconnection with nature. According to Emerson, we must learn self-reliance, breaking away from thoughtless conformity and our habitual tendencies and open towards new and more dynamic perspectives. We must learn to look within and follow our ideals and dreams, inspiring a dynamic and creative life. In this process, we must learn to trust our intuition to a greater extent and rely on rational argumentation less. Conceptions of overcoming fear and being courageous are important for Emerson, as is the sense of cheerful optimism. With Emerson, there's a strong rallying cry towards our individual integrity, creation, and freedom, and listening to our own spiritual depths within. However, Emerson's not a simple individualist, as there are also strong conceptions of interconnection and holism in his thought. For Emerson, in our depths, we are part of an interconnected whole, and we each have the opportunity for personal inspiration and revelation. Boyle writes in respect to self-reliance, "Indeed, to think of it as a theory of any sort can be misleading, given the importance Emerson attached to self-reliance as a personal life practice." For Emerson, we are connected to nature, and it's helpful to go outward towards nature, as it helps profoundly reconnect us with ourselves. Emerson writes of how the ancient precept know thyself and the modern precept study nature become at last one maxim. Emerson also writes of how in the woods is perpetual youth. Within these plantations of God, a decorum and sanctity reign, a perennial festival is dressed. And with this reference to a festival, he rolls on in this poetic vision, thundering into his famous transparent eyeball passage. "Standing on the bare ground, my head bathed by the blithe air and uplifted into infinite space, all mean egotism vanishes. I become a transparent eyeball. I am nothing. I see all. The currents of the universal being circulate through me. I am part or parcel of God." With this, I would propose to take Gadamer's conception of the festival and, with a sense of interpretive play, draw upon Emerson's conception of the interconnection with nature and all that it is. If we remember that Gadamer's description of a festival is made for everyone, and if someone does not participate, they exclude themselves, we might ask ourselves whether in our materialistic and scientistic culture, which many thinkers have criticized as dualistic and separating us from nature, do we not only destroy nature on this basis, but perhaps exclude ourselves from the festival of life? To what extent are we drawn into a mean egotism, to use Emerson's words, be it locked within our own cultural assumptions that sever us from more holistic experience? For Hadot, philosophy as a way of life is a training for wisdom, which, if done successfully, is a life of wisdom within the ancient conception of philosophy. When discussing the contemplation of nature, Hadot mentions a passage from by Philo of Alexandria, where the practice of wisdom leads to peace and joy, a part of which reads, "It goes without saying that such men, rejoicing in their virtues, make of their whole lives a festival." Where Hadot mentions that these lines refers to an aphorism from Diogenes the Cynic, and quoted by Plutarch, that reads, "Does not every good man consider every day a festival?" Does not a good man consider every day a festival? Emerson writes of how life is a festival only for the wise. The theme of openness has been running through this paper, openness to the other, be it human or nature, or an openness to oneself. For Hadot, the sense of oneness and interconnection with all that is was an important part of ancient philosophy, and I believe the dual conception of the festival of Emerson and, of Gadamer and Emerson being developed here, where the festive incorporates both the human and nature, can be helpful for articulating this in a contemporary context. For Gadamer, it's important to recognize our commonality, and this can transform us. Or, as he writes, discussing a symbolic perspective in his aesthetics, it is not only the "this thou art" disclosed in a joyous and frightening thought. It also says to us, "Thou must alter thy life." For Emerson, profound insights have the potential for self-transformation, where our faith comes in moments, our vices habitual, yet there is a depth in these brief moments which constrains us to ascribe more reality to them than to all other experiences. Philosophy as a way of life is something that must be continually reclaimed and worked at, one that leads towards self-understanding and self-transformation. It has been discussed that Gadamer's approach to dialogue relates to Hadot's conception of outer dialogue, and Emerson's conception of self-reliance relates to Hadot's conception of inner dialogue. However, it should be noted that aspects of Gadamer's thought relate to looking within an inner dialogue, for example, being aware of one's prejudices and biases, working towards being open, aspects of his conception of tearing, and other things. And for Emerson, human community and dialogue was also important. He lectured and traveled extensively, met many of the great thinkers in Europe of the day, such as Carlyle and Wordsworth, was a family man, and was involved with the Transcendentalist movement and its meetings, and was also involved in social causes such as the anti-slavery movement. Returning to Hadot's conception of dialogue as discussed in the introduction, only those who can dialogue with themselves can dialogue with others, and only those who can dialogue with others can dialogue with themselves, so approaches of looking within and to the other may be seen as complementary approaches. In conclusion and summary, Gadamer's conception of the I and thou as a practice of listening to the other was explored, and how it may encourage deeper listening and encourage us to move from a type 1 listening based on manipulation towards a type 3 listening based on openness and willingness to change. Emerson's conception of self-reliance was discussed as an approach towards listening within to oneself, and the importance of listening to the other and oneself has been discussed in relation to Gadamer and Emerson. And was explored how more festive perspectives may encourage transformation towards more participatory and holistic points of view, and how Gadamer and Emerson provide perspectives that articulate a conception of philosophy as a way of life in a contemporary context. Thank you. Mm-hmm.